This is Edward October, host of October Pod on YouTube. Hear that jingle jingle? It could be Kris Kringle, or a home invader looking for an open window, a jilted lover looking for revenge, or a disgruntled co-worker hoping to spike your eggnog with arsenic. The girls of our true crime podcast are always on Santa's nice list, but the crimes they discuss are very naughty indeed. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. Are you ready for day two?
Day two.
The second nightmare before Christmas.
And it's all you, girl. And I hear it's all me. So I can't wait.
It's something, that's for sure.
Very good. I cannot wait. So take it away.
When I looked this up, everything told me that this was one of the most sensational and most talked about murder cases in Canada's history. So I went to ask our friend Mike from Brewtime.
Hi, Mike.
Crime,
hi, Mike.
And Genevieve from True Crime Real Time.
Hi, Genevieve.
When I asked him about this, they had no idea who it was.
Yep. And guess what? You're going to hear it on our True Crime podcast because, you know.
And anyway, but considering this case is like 63 years old, that it has a play about it. There's been a movie, tons of books.
Really?
There's been music. There's even a well-known schoolyard chant, kind of like Lizzie Borden took an axe, gave her mother 40 whacks thing to it.
Right.
There's even one of those about this case.
Oh my gosh. I'm so interested. Well, let's hear it.
Yeah, it's kind of all right. So our case starts when Donald and Alexandra McLean immigrated to Beamsville, Canada, which is right near Niagara Falls. They came over from Scotland. So not long after they were here in the country, on October 13th, 1920, the couple had a daughter and they named her Evelyn.
Oh, I like that name.
So a year after Evelyn was born, family bought a little house in Hamilton, Ontario, and moved there. And there, Donald got a job working for the Hamilton Street Railway as a streetcar conductor.
Huh.
Now, later, he would get a job in the office where it would give him access to, you know, the company revenue. You know, the money that would come in and out of the company.
Uh-huh.
So you might want to remember that a little bit.
Embezzlement.
Because I'll remind you. But otherwise, you know, you'd think this nice 1920s, 1940s, like Canada, happy little place. No.
Sorry, I just hit my microphone.
What
sorry. The hell? I'm sorry. I was readjusting. I'm sorry. Okay.
Are
go
you
ahead.
Drinking?
No.
Are you drinking?
I'm sitting here trying to read. I had my notebook and I was doodling because that's what I do. And then I was like, I put it to the side and I hit it. I'm
gotcha.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Good hand-eye coordination, Camille.
Thanks.
Great.
Thanks.
So anyway, Evelyn's childhood was less than perfect, to say the least. Her father, Donald, he liked the liquor. He was an alcoholic. Kind
like
of.
Fire
he drank
water.
Too much.
Fire water.
Pretty much. He liked to drink a lot. And her mother was not exactly even keel. She had a very short fuse. She exploded and her temper got the best of her a lot of times. And to top that off, her parents really didn't get along very well.
Oh.
And they spent an awful lot of time apart, which is good if you don't get along very well.
Yeah.
Taking your break it's good. But Evelyn, they wouldn't really let Evelyn associate with other kids in the neighborhood. They said she was too fragile to play with the other kids in the neighborhood. But in reality, Alexandra really wanted Evelyn to hang out with kids that were better, i.e. moneyed. She wanted Evelyn to be a society kid, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hang out with the rich and famous. that, or just rich, whatever it took. But her dad was this streetcar conductor, right? So pretty soon, Donald and Alexandra pulled Evelyn out of the little local public school she went that she had been going to, and they placed her in this very prestigious elite school for the wealthy. Now, doing this kind of got the little neighbors talking, thinking, you know, he's just a lowly streetcar conductor. Oh. How's he affording it?
Was he embezzling it?
Well, it's unclear, but rumors started to fly that he was, you know, maybe dipping into the little tin. Because remember, it was a nickel every time you would ride the railway. And Evelyn would always show up in town with handfuls of nickels. And this was like in the early 1920s. So Evelyn herself as a little kid was spending money that little kids probably shouldn't have back then.
Little conspicuous is what you're saying.
Yes.
Gotcha.
So Evelyn tried really hard to be recognized as a socialite in, you know, her little part of Canada. And she would host lavish parties at some of the finest hotels in town. And she would buy her friends stuff, like not even just friends, acquaintances. She was trying to buy people's affection, right?
Little too free with the money.
She was, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But even by doing this, people really kind of kept her at arm's length. They really didn't accept her into the clique she wanted to be. You know, she's in her mid-teens when all this is happening, and she's got furs, and she has expensive jewelry.
With her dad as a train conductor?
Her dad is a train conductor, and he then went into the office. But, like, in her teens, this is what happened. But also at this time, when she's wearing all this lavish clothing and coats and jewels and everything, she's also spending time in the company of older men.
Ooh.
And at places out of town and at the racetracks.
Oh.
And you know what happens at the racetracks.
I do, because you told me.
The horses
me.
Run. Mm-hmm. That's where I make most of my money.
That's right.
That's how we finance the podcast.
That's right. All 53 cents.
Exactly, and I do that a penny a time. And it's all for you, baby, everybody. It's all for you. When Evelyn was 22 in 1942, Evelyn gave birth to a daughter. This made the townsfolk go crazy because she was not married, right? And back then, it was kind of like that huge sin. You don't have sex before you're married. You sure as hell don't get pregnant. So Evelyn, all of a sudden, she was like, guess what? I just got married to a man who is stationed overseas and his last name is White. So my name is now Evelyn White. This is his daughter, Heather. Now, but come to find out later, shockingly, there's no such person by the name as White whom she described.
Well, could she pick a more generic name? Just saying.
Smith. Jones. Yeah, but I get what you're saying. When Heather was born, she was born with a mental disability, and it would require a lot of attention from her mom and Alexandra, her grandmother. So the next summer, Evelyn found herself pregnant again. Now this time, the baby was a stillborn. The next summer, Evelyn was pregnant again, and unfortunately, the child did not survive. It was stillborn. Soon after, on September 5th, 1944, Evelyn gives birth to a little boy who she names Peter. Now, when she comes home from the hospital, she does not have Peter with her.
Oh.
Her mother asks, everybody asks, and she said she had to make the very hard decision of keeping Peter or putting him up for adoption. Since Peter's father was overseas fighting the Germans, she could not raise two children by herself, so she had to put Peter up for adoption. Does that make sense?
Totally, but that does not... That's not okay. She had the one, but okay.
As we know, Evelyn's parents pretty much hated each other. That's kind of strong words, but they didn't like each other. They fought all the time. They finally came to terms and got a divorce. Mm-hmm. So in June 1945, Evelyn moved in with Heather and her mother into an apartment in downtown Hamilton, Canada. They were all living nicely in a little apartment together. So one day, Evelyn takes Heather and they go see Evelyn's father, Donald, at his place of employment at the railroad company. Mm-hmm. Not railroad, streetcar company. Well, there, she's introduced to a man named John Dick, which is such an unfortunate name now. John Dick was Russian. I'm not for sure if he was an immigrant. I'm assuming he is. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been such a big deal to put that in the articles that I read. So we'll just say that he is a Russian immigrant. John was immediately enamored with Evelyn because Evelyn was absolutely stunning. People always commented on her shiny black curls and her huge black brown eyes. I mean, she was just a beautiful mm-hmm. girl. She was a head turner, mm-hmm. right?
Like me.
Sure. So soon, John and Evelyn started to see each other, and John would bring Heather and Evelyn gifts, and John was like head over heels for Evelyn, just loved her. And Evelyn really liked John. In fact, you know, she liked him pretty okay, and she really thought that he was wealthy because, you know, her dad worked for the railway.
Uh-huh. Oh, and poor girl.
She expected John to be wealthy, too. And she even told John that she was a widow because her husband, Mr. White, passed away while he was serving overseas. Mm-hmm. It's easy to kill off somebody that you made up.
Plus, he's at war. I mean, come on. It's a pretty good thing, right?
Yeah. Yep. After about a month of being together, Evelyn told her parents that she was going to marry John. Now, this shocked her mother because, one, she'd never heard of this John guy before. And the last person Alexandra knew Evelyn was dating was a man named Bill Bohosik. And to be quite honest, she wasn't happy. In fact, her mother didn't want her to marry a dick. That was a joke.
I think it's funny. I like wordplay.
Yeah. She was thinking more of her daughter should marry a Rockefeller type, not a dick. Needless to say, both parents did not approve of this marriage, and they both didn't attend the wedding at all. So after
I still think so that dick Evelyn, comment was John, really funny.
That
the
what?
Dick joke.
Didn't want her daughter didn't want to marry.
That's good stuff.
Nobody wants to marry a dick. You want to marry a Rockefeller, not a dick.
I'm funny.
Thanks.
I love stupid
So
humor.
After Evelyn and John got married, they didn't live together.
Ever?
In fact, Evelyn and Heather and her mother still lived in that same apartment, but Evelyn told John that there just wasn't enough room for him.
What?
In the apartment.
What?
I know, weird, right?
I mean, you don't want to marry a dick, but if you do, you gotta live with it, you know what I mean?
You should live with a dick, yeah. Needless to say, John wasn't very happy, which, no offense, that was kind of cold cocked with that, and, John wasn't happy at all, but eventually John did purchase a house, but for some reason, when they looked back on everything, like paperwork and stuff, it was only Evelyn's name on the deed of the house and on the mortgage. And in fact, Evelyn was the one that paid the deposit on the house.
So he didn't really buy the house. She did. She did, right?
She did. Maybe her parents gave her the money to do it. Maybe a boyfriend gave
her.
But they lived in the house together, not for very long, to be quite honest, and the honeymoon was pretty much over. Evelyn realized that John was poor, and he would not be able to afford her the life that she wanted mm-hmm. to live. So she went about her old ways, going out and seeing older men.
So she went out trying to find some new dick?
Some new dick, yes. She was a party girl. To say it nicely, she was a party girl. She wanted to catch her an older, wealthy man because that's how her parents pretty much raised her mm-hmm. to be. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Or at least her mother,
yeah.
anyway.
Yeah. No, well, she got accustomed to the life, right? Like,
right.
she needed...
I mean, as a teenager, she was wearing
exactly.
furs and
like,
expensive jewelry. Yeah. I mean, she was taken care of by her gentleman friends.
Yeah,
right?
You can't go down from there. I mean, you could, but... And probably she did.
Obviously, she was going down. Yeah. She was going down. That's how you get jewelry, Camille. I don't know if
that's,
you know
that's
this.
What I said.
Yeah. John, even though he wasn't wealthy, he was no dummy. So he moved out of the house and went to live with a cousin. But John really wanted to make the marriage work. He was still head over heels in love with Evelyn, and he needed to get her back. So he decided to go talk to her father, Donald. He thought Donald could help, you know, put a little bug in his daughter's ear and saying, you know what, you really need to get back with John. You made the commitment. You took the candy. You know, you got to do
it. You need dick.
Right?
You need
got it.
You need dick.
You need dick in your life. You need a dick in your life, right?
Right. We all do.
Well, here's the thing, though. Donald didn't really like John, never really liked him in the first place. In fact, he didn't really think that John was the right person for his daughter. And plus, he just didn't want to get involved. He wanted to stay far away from it as possible, right?
He didn't like Dick.
He didn't like Dick. And John was mad. It pissed him off. So he then threatened Donald by saying, hey, if you don't help me, I'm going to go to the police and tell them that you've been stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars from the railway all these years, right? And I'm sure that's a lot of nickels, right? It's a lot of nickels.
Wow.
I'm no math whiz, but I know that's a lot of nickels.
Wow. Kind of like when we won the nickels at Slots O' Fun in Vegas, remember?
Oh, yeah. Yay, we won 126 nickels. We don't know how much that is, but yay, we won it. Yes. As you can imagine, John putting this in his face, like, I'm going to go to the police. I know you've been stealing this money. I'm going to go to the police. You're blah, blah, blah. If you don't help me. Kind of like this little blackmail. Mm-hmm. Donald got pissed.
I would too.
So mad, in fact, that he threatened to kill John.
Ew.
Right? Threatened him. Threatened John with his life. Well, John, he wasn't playing around with any of it. He immediately reported the threat to the police. He let them know that, you know, that he was being threatened by Donald. And John tried really
in a way,
really,
he was threatening back. You know what I mean? Like, he had started it with the, I'm going to do this, right?
Well, he did. Yeah. But he only threatened to, you know, I'm just going to tell him you stole. Well,
how does he think
well,
that's going to
as
end?
The other one threatened his life. Yeah. I don't know. The guy's a dick. That's what dicks do. The whole line of dicks.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick. Don't even marry into a dick.
No, you can marry a dick, but don't be a dick.
Yeah. No matter how hard John tried, he just couldn't keep the marriage together. It just didn't work at all. And then on March 6th, 1946, John Dick disappeared.
Oh. Huh.
Just like that.
No more Dick.
Just like that, Camille.
No more Dick.
One Saturday, March 16th, 10 days later, 1946, a group of 5 children were out playing around Hamilton in what they call an escarpment, which basically the locals call it the mountain. An escarpment is basically, you know, you see those movies where, you know, they're driving down the road and all of a sudden they go in this really far down a ditch, but it's not really a ditch. It's like this huge hill. You know what I'm talking about? And then you go up another side of the hill. Does that make, it's kind of like a big valley,
a valley
type thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to
you? Yes.
Yeah, kind of like a valley, but it's the kids were playing down there in this valley.
Okay.
When all of a sudden they see this pink thing.
It's a dick.
Right?
Is it a dick?
It is part of a dick. But actually, they thought it looked like what?
A dick.
Hello?
A dick.
No.
It's pink.
No. You're supposed to say a
mannequin. Oh, it's a mannequin. I'm sorry. We're talking about dicks. So,
right.
You know. It's never a mannequin, Jen.
Well, didn't
it's
know.
Never a mannequin. We know that already.
But they didn't even think it was a mannequin, Camille. They thought it was a headless pig.
Oh. Seriously?
Seriously. Ooh. And be quite honest, humans are supposed to taste like pig. Not that I would know that per se. But anyway, they thought it was a headless pig. They ran up the hill and they went and got some adults who went down and they found out that it was not a headless pig. In fact, it was just the torso of an adult male. The head, the arms, and the legs were missing.
Was the head missing? The head?
It's 1940s. They don't talk about stuff like that. And you should be ashamed about
Yeah. I'm totally ashamed.
The head, arms, and legs were missing, never to be found. Well, that day. And there is also...
Sorry, that is not funny. Sorry.
Also, there was a deep wound that had been cut into the abdomen, which investigators thought that, you know, maybe somebody tried to cut the torso in half, but just couldn't do it.
That is awful.
Uh-huh. The body was collected, and there was a positive ID made by John Dick's brother-in-law that it was the remains of John Dick, who was a conductor for the Hamilton Street Railway. John's cousin, Alexander Kammerer, came into the police department once he found out that this body had been found, because Alexander became worried when he heard reports of the torso that had been found, and he started to believe that something might have been wrong there. Something might have happened to John since, you know, his marriage to Evelyn had failed. Uh-huh. And Alexander had wondered whether John had maybe returned to the house where he lived with Evelyn, but he just didn't know. He had never seen John since that day on March 6th. Not that he could pick up the phone and call to find out if he was living there, but that's a different show. Soon after, Evelyn was taken to the police headquarters, and she was questioned about what happened. Mm-hmm. Now, when they told Evelyn that they found her husband's torso, her remark was, "Don't look at me. I don't know anything about it."
And that's a normal.
That's not suspicious at all.
And that's a normal, totally. Gosh,
it's normal.
Totally normal reaction from a spouse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Then she went on to tell the police about this Italian hitman kind of guy who arrived at her door that was looking for John. Because you always blame it on the mafia, right?
Well, duh.
Yeah. This mafia guy, hitman type kind of guy, he said he was going to fix John for messing around with his wife.
Uh-huh.
And then he just left. He didn't tell Evelyn at all who he was, who his wife was. Nothing of the sort.
Yeah.
Just said he was going to fix John for sleeping with his wife and then left.
Yeah.
That's really believable.
Well, you know, I have the mafia at my door all the time.
All the time. I know.
Yep.
I know. So a few days later, a man by the name of Bill Landig comes to the police and said, "You know what? Evelyn borrowed my Packard, his car." And when I got it... His Packard car is what it
is. Sorry. I heard Packer.
It said a large Packard car, which I don't know if there's different sizes of Packard cars. I just thought it would be a standard size Packard.
Okay.
But when Evelyn returned the car back to Mr. Landig, there was blood all over the front seat, on the seat covers. Some of the seat covers were missing.
It was that.
And there's bloody.
It was that darn mob.
Yeah.
The mafia.
It was. There's
that, right?
Bloody clothing in the car, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Evelyn's not very bright. But anyway, Evelyn, instead of speaking with Mr. Landig, she wrote a note and said, "You know what? Heather cut herself and made a huge mess. Sorry." Yeah. "Heather's not in the hospital. I'm sorry." The amount of blood in there indicated that Heather probably would not be breathing.
Yeah.
But anyway. The investigation, they took blood samples, and they found out, of course, it was 1945. Only thing they can do is do types of blood, and it was John's blood type. So at this point, Evelyn, who's super duper smart, is telling police that a mysterious man called her and told her that John had impregnated a woman and he was going to get what was coming to him. And then the man asked to meet her so he could borrow a car.
Uh-huh.
Evelyn then explained that she met the man and he had a large sack with him and he told her it contained part of John.
Right.
And then she went on to say that she drove the man and his sack to the dumping site.
My favorite part is that she got in the car with this guy that claimed to have.
Well, he asked her to borrow a car.
Well,
not just any car. He called and said, "Listen, I'm going to fix John. I need you to get a car, and now I've got a sack of John. I've got a sack of Dick, basically."
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Got dick in a sack.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. I've got to get rid of the torso of your husband, you know, that I killed your husband, and I need to get rid of him. Could you borrow a car? I know you don't know me because I'm a mysterious man.
Yeah, and you know what? You got it, buddy. And not only that, I'm going to get in that car with you. I'm going to drive with you.
Exactly.
Yeah. With dick in a bag.
No offense. I don't even think I'd go to my neighbors to ask to borrow a car to take my husband to the hospital. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd borrow a car to take a sack of dick anywhere.
You would, though, if you're making this up, and I think she's making it up.
I know. She's just not. I don't know. Let's keep going.
Let's keep going. I want to find out what's in the bag.
So the police said, okay, Evelyn, let's see what you're doing. So Evelyn took the police on the route that she claimed that the man made her take, right? And when they asked her if it was alarming that her husband's body was in the vehicle with her in the sack, she said she wasn't very happy about it. But
okay.
But the fact it was a pretty mean trick to break up a home, meaning that John got another woman pregnant and it broke up her marriage.
Oh, the fact that he was broken up into little pieces in the bag when she got in the car with
the
stranger. Okay.
Yep. But she kept denying that she didn't conspire to kill her husband. And believe it or not, every time they asked Evelyn any questions, her responses and her demeanor were just inappropriate for the situation.
It hasn't been so far. I'm shocked. Shocked, I tell you.
Well, everybody said that she was an extremely bright girl. But later, when a psychiatrist interviewed her, and this is 1940s talk, people. This isn't what I would say. The psychiatrist later found her to be on the borderline between having dull, normal, and moron-like intelligence.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
In addition to this, it was reported that she had the mental capacity of a 13-year-old girl.
Oh, that's kind of sad. Really?
It is.
Okay.
So, and then once again, Evelyn changed her story and then signed a second statement saying that the involvement of the Italian mafia killers, you know?
Yeah, them.
They were hired by her ex-boyfriend, Bill Bohosik. Bill Bohosik hired the Italian mafia to kill Dick. John Dick, that is.
Well, I don't know about anybody else, but that is exactly what I was thinking happened. I mean, that totally makes sense.
Police searched Evelyn's property, and in the backyard, police found bits of human bones mixed in with cinders from the furnace. It seems that she'd burned possibly the head and the limbs. She incinerated him in the coal furnace of her house. In her father's basement, Don McLean, not the American Pie singer Don McLean, but a different, her dad, Don McLean. That'd be a whole new,
new
Mr.
episode.
John Dick. Yeah. In her dad's basement, they found bullet holes in a pipe. I guess they shot him in the basement and hit one of the plumbing pipes or something. They found a revolver and cartridges. They found saws and bloodstained shoes that was pretty much confirmed to be John's. So faced with this turn of events, and having been told that Bill Bohosik had been brought in for questioning, Evelyn Dick told another story.
Of course she did.
She said that Bill had killed John. Just out and out killed John.
Not the mob. The mafia.
No, not the mafia.
Okay.
He just went and straight did it.
Shocked.
But here's a fun turn at events. During the police investigation of Evelyn and her father's house, police stumble across a beige suitcase in an attic trunk. When the police opened the suitcase, they discovered the remains of a baby boy.
Oh, really?
He was encased in concrete.
What?
It was Peter. David is a whole different other story. Now, Alexandra McLean later told police that she had seen the husband at the trunk a day before. And when she went into the room, he screamed at her and told her to get out.
So the husband killed Peter?
Well, later it is said that Evelyn blamed Bill Bohosik on killing the child also, along with John. She had Peter before she even met John Dick.
Right.
She had Heather, then she had a stillborn, then she had Peter. When she came home from the hospital, she didn't have a baby. And everybody's like, where's the baby? Oh, I had to give him up for adoption. I had to make that hard decision mm-hmm. because I'm pretty much a single woman. My husband's overseas. So everybody thought this little baby was adopted. But in reality, he was encased in concrete, put in a suitcase, and put in the attic. Mm-hmm. He wasn't found until 2 years later. And he may not have ever been found if they didn't have killed John.
Well, I think we all know who the right? dick is right now. But okay, go ahead.
Thank you. After that, Evelyn, Bill Bohosik, and Donald McLean were then charged with the murder of John Dick. And on October 1946, Evelyn stood before the court for her first trial, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it said it was completely sensationalized, right?
Mm-hmm.
Charles Gillis of the McLean magazine comments that, quote, it was the golden day of newspapers and they had a field day with Hamilton's Black Widow trial. Constant front page treatment of the story transfixed readers, drawing hundreds to gather outside of the courthouse during the proceedings. And I have to say, I had to laugh because there is a picture of just men lining up in front of the courthouse. And it has the caption says, thousands of people wait in line for the Dick trial. And so, but when I first saw it and I opened it up, part of it was closed off. So it just said for the Dick.
Oh, wow.
So it made me laugh.
And she was attractive, right?
She was attractive. And of course, the newspapers, that's what they commented mm-hmm. on.
Of course. That's what I mean. And
silky
it's,
black yeah. curls and her doe-like innocent eyes. And she wore a sleeveless black dress and she had a beauty mark and her lipstick and her nail polish. And that's what they commented on.
Yeah.
On the trial. You know, it was, it's.
Of course.
Ludicrous yeah, how they were back then.
Yep.
Horrible. 9 days of testimony. 9 days. And the jury took less than 2 hours and they returned a guilty verdict.
Thank you.
Evelyn was given the death sentence.
Oh.
And she was to be hanged.
Huh.
Technically, Evelyn probably didn't kill John.
Right.
But she was guilty in participating in the planning and, you know,
mm-hmm.
making sure it happened. And in time, the verdict was overturned on appeal. And it was ruled that Evelyn's statements to police were improperly admitted into evidence and that the trial judge did not properly instruct the jury. So her sentence was commuted. Now, Bill Bohosik and Donald McLean were held for a long length of time before they had a joint trial together.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Bohosik walked. He simply walked away from his crime because Evelyn was the only witness prosecutors had, and she refused to testify against Bill.
Really?
Just refused. She wouldn't do it. So Bill walked free. If Bill killed John, free man.
So do you think that she was in love with him? Like, do you think that was on purpose?
Well, you remember her mom said, well, who's this John Dick guy? She's been dating this Bill Bohosik, uh-huh. and now she wants to marry John Dick.
Uh-huh.
My personal thought is since she thought John was wealthy, that maybe her and Bill kind of went together thinking, I didn't do any research on Bill, so I don't know how wealthy he was.
Mm-hmm.
If she was dating him, I would guess that he was
mm-hmm.
wealthy, but mm-hmm. I don't know. Evelyn's father, Donald, was found guilty as an accessory after the fact, and he was sentenced to 5 years in prison, where I believe he served out his term.
That's it?
So, yes, just five. They couldn't prove. There was really no mm-hmm. hard evidence.
Right.
And she lied so many times. They know one of the three did it, but they couldn't prove which one did it. And since Donald had all the incriminating evidence in his house,
right.
but they couldn't prove that he was the one that actually pulled the trigger, right?
Hmm.
So, but we're not done with Evelyn.
No.
She had another trial for the death of her son, Peter. And she was found guilty of manslaughter in his death. Evelyn was sentenced to life in Kingston Penitentiary. Now, in 1958, Evelyn was paroled.
Wow.
And nobody knows what happened to her.
She
had her name changed and her whereabouts are unknown.
Really?
When she would have gotten out of prison, she would have been 38 years old. So she could have remarried. She could have had more kids. She could have gone into hiding. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody knows. To this day, nobody knows. That's wrong. Somebody knows.
38 years is people really have, young. I mean, that's...
Very young.
You know?
I didn't get married till I was 33, right? First time?
First time my you first got married?
Still, yeah.
Okay.
I'm still on my first marriage, but there's always hope. No, it's young. Who knows what... And she would be 99 years old today. I mean, she still technically could be alive. And actually, when I was researching it, somebody did say that she was still alive. But here's my problem. Numerous reporters over the years have tried to find her. And in 2001, a man by the name of Brian Valley or Valley wrote a book called The Torso Murder, The Untold Story of Evelyn Dick. Oh. Now, he's died. He's not alive anymore. Mm. But he interviewed the senior parole board officer, Mary Louise Lynch, who said that she kept up with Evelyn mm-hmm. for years after her release. They would mm-hmm. send letters to each other. And, of course, Mary Louise Lynch has since died. But it's quoted in this book that Dick's identity was such a secret that even her daughter, Heather, didn't know her mother's name and where she was.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's terrible. Huh. I believe it, though.
And in 1985, Evelyn was granted a pardon and her record was permanently sealed.
Why was she granted a pardon? Just because the case was a mess? And, like, there was no proof?
I have no idea. Huh. I have no idea why she was pardoned. Yeah. So that's it. The town of Hamilton, they've written a play called Why Did You Do It, Mrs. Dick? They sell shot glasses. The way to a man's heart is through his torso.
Ooh.
I mean, it's like a huge...
It's yeah. a folklore. It's become
called,
a folklore,
it's called
right?
It's called How Could You, Mrs. Dick? And like the sing-song thing is, you took a saw and you cut off his arms. You took a saw, you cut off his arms. You took a saw, you cut off his head. How could you, Mrs. Dick? How could you, Mrs. Dick? And then there's like a punk rock song by the Forgotten Rebels that came out in 1989. Tons. I mean, it's just like, it's this huge thing yeah. in Hamilton. They do ghost tour and they go by the house. And yeah, it's something.
I bet. Do you think she did it?
I think she had something to do with it.
Yeah.
I think she and her dad was afraid that he was going to say something about the money mm-hmm. being mm-hmm. stolen. I think yeah. Bill Bohozik had something to do, you know,
right.
with it. I think yeah. all three of them had something to do with it, but I don't think...
Like who actually murdered I don't think him, she, right?
Yeah, I don't think she was smart enough to murder him, is what I'm saying, you know.
And what city did this take place in?
Hamilton, Ontario, just the other side of Niagara Falls.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
kind
Jen,
of a
that's...
fun little old story to go to. And it's, yeah, Genevieve helped me do a little bit research and to see if, because I wanted to do the actual chant, you know, like mm-hmm. Lizzie Borden took an axe.
Oh, yeah. What is the chant?
I wanted to find that. And so that's why I asked Mike and Genevieve to see if they had heard it, because mm-hmm. I wanted to do that on here and they hadn't. But Genevieve asked a group, because she lives actually close to Hamilton, and she still didn't know this. But she asked a group, and the guy's like, well, you can get in touch with her. She's still alive, and she's like 99 years old. And I'm like, well, he's like the only person alive that knows who she is. Anybody that did know who she was mm-hmm. or who she changed her name to has long died. You know,
she
you
probably
have to remember that she was born in 1920s.
She probably went on, had a whole new life, like, yeah. At that age, you could. You're right. She yeah. probably got married, had kids, went on, and I wonder what
totally
happened to her daughter.
Heather?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know.
Maybe they put her in a home somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
You know, if she was mentally handicapped,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they back then they would put them in homes.
Right.
But her mother, when Evelyn would go out on the town to meet her boyfriends, which, by the way, on trial, Evelyn said that she had slept with over 150 men.
Mm-hmm.
When she would go out with these men, Heather would always stay with her grandmother. But her grandmother was pretty old by the time of the trial, or looked old at the time of the trial.
Yeah, but they looked old at age 40 back then. But yeah.
Right. Huh. Exactly. But yeah, this happened when she was 25.
Why would she go on trial and say she slept with 150 men? Would you have to say that?
Well, back then, well, it still happens today. They're trying to slut shame you, right? Like the one girl that died because she was strangled to death. Well, she was into, you know, BDSM. Mm-hmm. Well, just because you like that doesn't mean that it's okay to be strangled to death.
No kidding.
That has no, what you prefer in the bedroom or what you do in your own private bedroom has nothing to do with anything else in your life. So, but yeah, I just thought it was a very interesting little fun.
Not fun, Jen. You keep saying fun. Not fun. It's murder. It's terrible. But it's very interesting.
The murder is
perplexing.
Yeah.
Right? Who killed baby Peter, you think? Like, why?
I think she probably did.
Why?
She didn't want to be burdened down?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if she has two kids, I mean, it's probably hard enough in the 40s. Not only that, is her husband supposed to be serving overseas and she's pregnant again for the third time? How does that work?
And he hasn't been home in 18 months. That's the funny part.
And she's been pregnant twice. Exactly.
Yeah. Plus, if Heather was special needs, right? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there could be that Peter was special needs too, or something wasn't quite right with him and she couldn't take the added stress.
Hmm.
But her mother said that she was expecting the child to come home, and Evelyn said that the child was put up for adoption.
That's horrible, too. Well, Jen, that was a doozy.
Second day is over. We're ready for the third.
Whoop, whoop. Bring it. All right, Jen.
Yep,
so
let's do it.
We will talk to you guys
tomorrow.
And until then, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at WeTalkOfDreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya.